And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, men's and boys' issues, and more. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and our special guest today is Dr. Vincent Ho. Dr. Ho is a clinical academic gastroenterologist and a senior lecturer at the School of Medicine, University of Western Sydney. He is also a practicing gastroenterologist. He has appeared on Michael Mosley's Better Guts program on SBS and is a frequent contributor to The Conversation, where his articles have been viewed by over 5 million people. Dr. Ho is the author of The Healthy Baby Gut Guide, Preventing Allergies that and Build Immunity, Develop Good Gut Health from Day One, The Essential Guide to Baby Gut Health in the First 1,000 Days. Dr. Ho, welcome to Dads on the Air.
Hi, Bill. Thank you for having me on your show.
So, Vincent, it is topical to be talking about a pandemic at the moment. In your book, The Healthy Baby Gut Guide, you draw on your personal and your professional experience to guide us in a non-COVID area causing growing concern. What do you see as the main concerns of these allergies?
Yeah, so we know that nearly 1 in 5 Australians suffer from some form of allergy. So it's a very common problem. And unfortunately, we know that the prevalence of allergies is going to rise. The data over the last few decades has been showing very clearly that there is an uptick in terms of the prevalence of allergies. And we know that in Australia, for example, for children between the age of 0 and 4 years of age, there was about a 5.5-fold increase in a very severe form of allergic reaction called anaphylaxis from 1994 to 2005. So not only is the prevalence of allergies in children increasing, but we also know that the severity of the allergic reaction is also increasing. So I think there is an imperative to do something about it.
How would you distinguish an allergy, say, from people often talk about gluten intolerance and, you know, different types of intolerance? How would you distinguish the two?
Look, it's a great question. And one thing I want to point out, and it's very important, is that an allergy is an immune reaction, whereas an intolerance doesn't involve the immune system. So we know that when it comes to allergies, and I'll give food allergies as an example, the body is very good at telling you quite quickly if a certain food disagrees with you. So as a gastroenterologist, I'm often alert to symptoms like diarrhea, nausea, abdominal pain. The other symptoms you can get include tingling, itching in the mouth, raised red skin bumps, like hives and rashes, and of course some of the more worrying features of anaphylaxis, like swelling of the tongue and face, difficulty in breathing, wheezing. But what we find with allergies, and in particular with food allergies, is that symptoms often start as soon as a few minutes after eating food and as long as 2 hours later. We know that when it comes to food intolerances, it's not driven by the immune system. It's more of a metabolic response. And typically it happens later on when it comes to children than food allergies. So food allergies can happen very early on in life. But when it comes to lactose intolerance, it typically happens around for children around 3 or 4 years of age. And they present with symptoms more like diarrhea, loose bowel motions, but they don't get the other symptoms that I've just mentioned before, like the itching of the skin, the raised red skin bumps, and the other serious features of anaphylaxis.
You just mentioned then the 1,000 days. So you do focus on the first 1,000 days of a baby's life, so roughly about 2 years of age. Is that that's an important stage of developing allergies in life, I guess?
It really is. And the reason why it's so important is because of the importance of the gut itself. So gut development in early childhood has a huge impact on the development of the immune system. And so the things that you can do in the first 1,000 days of a child's life through influencing their gut health can actually set the foundations for a very good immune system. And that way it can help to minimize and hopefully prevent allergies.
Something that I think probably most parents have confronted. I know I've certainly had some worrying moments with my son in the area of allergies, and I know in your book you describe your own experience, but parents do often feel guilty about causing harm, don't they? Is that an intention of your book, to parents know what a bit more about what they're actually doing?
That's right, because one of the things we find with parents is that can, and certainly myself, and this is the reason why I wrote the book, because there's often not a lot of information out there around allergies, and unfortunately a lot of concern about them. Certainly from my personal experience with my daughter Olivia, when we first exposed her to a bit of egg, she had a very bad reaction, you know, a very prominent rash over the lips, over her face. She started getting distressed and wheezy, and fortunately that all settled. But at the time, as a first-time parent, with all my medical training, I was panicking, and I didn't know how severe the reaction would be. I genuinely was worried that I could lose my baby girl. Mm. And that really inspired me, Bill, to sort of learn more about allergies. And the more I learned about it, the more I discovered the connections between allergies and the infant gut. So what I want to impart here is that, you know, a lot of knowledge about allergies can be very helpful in sort of guiding your kids on the right path.
I've had that feeling. You feel absolutely helpless when your child is going through an allergic reaction, you know, maybe not even as severe as anaphylactic, but a severe reaction, and it's so worrying, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And, you know, Bill, I mean, I know of many patients of mine who have actually literally parked their cars outside a hospital when testing their kids with certain solid foods like peanuts for the very first time, because they're so concerned that there could be a reaction, so they can rush them into the emergency department. Now, I don't think that's actually necessary, because as I write in the book, there are some strategies that parents can use to safely introduce some of these allergenic foods for their kids. But I can see the concern which is there, and because allergies aren't going away anytime soon, there is going to be more concern around allergies, and I can understand that parents, you know, can, and certainly the way that I feel as well, that the parents can get very, you know, emotionally caught up with all this.
And what I like particularly about your book is that it's very straightforward, and you set out the current research levels, because it is very difficult for parents, isn't it? I mean, I was born at a time when when mothers were encouraged to take thalidomide, for example. And fortunately, my mother rejected it. But parents are in this difficult situation, aren't they, where they perhaps get a lot of advice?
You're absolutely right, Bill. And one of the hardest things for parents is that often the advice they're getting, one, is lots and lots of advice. And so it's hard to keep on top of all the advice that you're receiving. But secondly, there's sometimes conflicting advice, and it changes constantly. So a good example of this is when it comes to the introduction of allergenic foods. About a decade ago, Bill, the prevailing thought was that we should be introducing peanuts and other allergenic foods when their kids are toddlers, because they'll have a more mature immune system. But what we're realizing now is that these foods should be introduced in the first year of life. So between 6 months and 12 months is the time period to be introducing these allergenic foods, because the data has come out, and it was only 5 years ago that there were these big studies coming out of the United Kingdom to show that by exposing your kids earlier on in life, in the first year of life, to these allergenic foods, it would make a big difference in reducing their risk of allergies. But this information is new, and you can see how it can be challenging for parents to keep on top of all that new information.
Another thing you point out now is that even a fetus has a certain role to play in preventing allergies in the future.
That's absolutely right. So we know that during pregnancy itself, there are certain interventions that have been shown to reduce the risk of childhood allergies. And certainly we would encourage mothers to make sure that they have vitamin D supplements if they need it. And it's also recommended that serving of oily fish can be very beneficial in reducing childhood allergies. But I also mentioned in my book, and this was to me a very interesting insight that I hadn't appreciated earlier on before I started doing research, that exposure to a farming environment during pregnancy itself was associated with a reduction in childhood allergies. So I was like, wow, that's really interesting. And I had to, for my second kid, Brandon, I had to persuade my wife, a city girl, to take a baby moon to a farm. you know, I had to convince her that there are allergy protective benefits from being on a farm, you know, feeding and petting animals. So that, to me, that was a really interesting insight.
Yes, so some of the things you talk about certainly are counterintuitive, which is very interesting. And we're speaking today with Dr. Vincent Ho, who is the author of The Healthy Baby Gut Guide. And Vincent, we've reached the part of the show where we ask our guests if they'd like to pick a song. Would you like to tell us which one you've picked and perhaps why you picked it?
Yes. So I chose Happy by Pharrell Williams because ultimately the message in my book and in my general advice is that we want, above all, for our kids to be healthy and happy.
It might seem crazy what I'm about to say. Sunshine, she's here, you can take a break. I'm a hot air balloon that could go to space. With the air, like I don't care, baby, by the way.
That was Happy by Pharrell Williams, as specially chosen for us today by our guest, Dr. Vincent Ho. Dr. Vincent Ho is the author of The Healthy Baby Gut Guide, Prevent Allergies, Build Immunity and Develop Good Gut Health from Day One. So, Vincent, we were just talking about the preparation that people can play with their children and preventing allergies later on. It's interesting that the baby is born, if it's a normal vaginal birth, the baby doesn't have any bacteria in the gut. Is that correct?
Well, what we find is when kids are born, they're actually born with a sterile gut. So in the womb, the gut itself is sterile, but the delivery itself is very important in conferring some bacteria to the baby. So through a vaginal delivery, we know that babies are born with microbes in their gut, the comes to a cesarean section, we find that the types of microbes in their gut are actually skin-based, so coming from the skin because of the cesarean section. So it's very important. The mode of delivery does help to shape their gut microbiota very early on in life, but then there are a number of other factors that are very important, such as the way they're fed, so breastfeeding, whether exposed to antibiotics, solid foods, of course, and when milk feeding essentially ceases. So there are a number of important stages during infancy where we can see some big transitions in the gut microbiota profile.
And there's an enormous expansion in the number of cells. I mean, you make the point that I think an adult will have something like 40 trillion cells in their gut. And curiously, that's the same number of cells that we have of our human cells in our body. So it makes you think sometimes, do you think that humans are just a host for bacteria?
Well, that's a really great question because, yes, you know, there is this tremendous expansion in terms of bacteria starting off from the infant gut. And what we know about the infant gut, and this is really quite amazing, is that it goes through two big transitions in infancy. So the first is after birth, where there's during lactation. So we get this big dominance of good, healthy microbes, and one of them is called bifidobacterium, which is found, by the way, in a lot of probiotics. But the second transition is during that weaning period with the introduction of solid foods. And so after that tremendous expansion, which occurs up to about 3 years of life, that is when, around the time that a kid turns three, that is when we see the development of a more stable onset, a more stable adult type of bacterial profile. And that's when we can see the numbers, which have reached around 40 trillion. What's also very interesting, Bill, is that by the time a child turns one, we know that their gut microbiota profile is very unique. Like an individual fingerprint. So even though there's lots and lots and lots of bacteria, when you do sample it, and we do that by taking stool samples from infants, we see that each infant has a very unique gut microbiota profile.
Look, just going back a minute, you mentioned about the advantages of perhaps going to a farm environment, and so it's best not to live in a cocoon. What are you actually talking about there? I mean, not just sort of going to the homestead, but you're actually talking about getting out in the fields and in the barns and things?
Yes, that's right. So I'm not advocating here, for example, for mothers to go about on a ride, riding horses when they're pregnant, but it's about actually getting immersed in feeding and petting animals, you know, walking around stables. It's really, in many ways, counterintuitive to what we normally think, because in pregnancy we want to almost, you know, keep mothers in a cocoon. But actually, it's been found that exposure to what we call old friend microbes, and this is the idea, Bill, that exposure to these good old friend microbes that have been around in our natural environment for a long time, which unfortunately our kids aren't getting exposed to anymore because of environmental changes or because they're being brought up in very sterile urban environments, exposure to those good old friend microbes is very good at stimulating the appropriate development of the immune system. And that can happen very early on in life. And in fact, as I mentioned before, during pregnancy, we can start seeing the benefits. So it really is quite a change from the way we normally think of things, particularly during pregnancy. And even for our very young children, we're often wanting to keep them also in a cocoon, but getting them exposed to farms, getting exposed to pets as well, because there's also data to suggest that the more pets a baby is exposed to, the less likely they are to develop a childhood allergy.
I guess this is part of an older question about sensitization versus tolerance. And, you know, there are people saying that children should be allowed to play in the dirt and do things like that, and perhaps they are a bit too sheltered these days, where they live in apartments and perhaps never get exposed to any of the germs they're going to have to live with later in life.
That's exactly right, Bill, because we know that early life exposure to these old friend microbes, which I call them, it does help to train the immune system to respond appropriately to threats. But what I mean by that is that the immune system learns very early on to recognize some foreign substances, such as nasty germs, as threats, but also develops that tolerance to other substances, such as the foods we eat. And that makes sense, because if we have an immune reaction to every single food that we would eat, generate an inappropriate response to a foreign substance, such as a peanut, which ordinarily they should be tolerating in their diet.
It's curious, isn't it? Because, I mean, the body has this reaction, and it's, you know, you think it's trying to do the right thing by the germ, and yet it's like an overreaction that causes more problems than it's curing.
That's right. And that's why these interventions have been shown to be helpful time and time again. Exposure to a farming environment, having a number of pets. And even, Bill, there was a study from Sweden that found that cleaning a dummy by sucking it before giving back to the baby considerably reduced the risk of childhood eczema and asthma. I came across that study, and that was really interesting. And I want to tell you here, I shared that news with my wife, Cindy, and I said to her, this is when my son was a few months old, hey, Cindy, look at all these great benefits for Brandon when you suck on his dummy and give it back to him. And she came back and said to me, well, that's lovely, dear. I've just got a dummy that's fallen on the ground. Why don't you give it a go first? And Bill, you know, it was difficult. You know, I almost spat the dummy. But eventually you just learn to suck it up.
Oh, I see. So, look, this is an age-old question. Even the whole question of dummies is a bit of a perennial. But so you're saying it fathers should do it as well as mothers?
Yes. Yes, that's right. If you're in good health, you don't have any major infectious illnesses, and you've got good dental and oral hygiene, there's a lot of benefit in giving, in cleaning a dummy by sucking it before giving it to the baby, because we know that saliva that comes from a healthy adult has a lot of microbes and other immune factors that's actually been shown to be very beneficial for a baby's immune system.
You talk in your book about the benefits of breastfeeding. Of course, you know, some women aren't able to, but where you are able to breastfeed and you've got plenty of milk, what would you say is the best time to continue that practice for?
Yeah, so, look, I think breastfeeding should certainly be continued to at least 6 months of age. People often recommend that be continued to about a year. It's obviously up to the individual mother. I know that for my wife, Cindy, she found it very difficult to express enough milk. So she was breastfeeding, mixed breastfeeding, and obviously using formula as well, to around 6 months of age.
Now, just going back a minute, too, you mentioned about the sensitization versus tolerance. There are a lot of allergies that aren't food related. I'm thinking of dust mites, and can you develop a tolerance to them as well?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And when it comes to those sorts of allergies, we know that often there are slightly different trigger factors for them. So obviously we know that with foods, things are very defined. When it comes to some of the other allergens, for example, like pollen and dander, which can come from pets. So, you know, I mentioned before that having pets can be quite protective, but the one caveat is that if you already have that reaction to a pet, then obviously that's where taking away the pet from the household is a good thing. When it comes to exposure to those sorts of allergens like pollen and dander, we know there's a lot of benefit in actually removing allergen itself. So when it comes to hay fever, for example, one of the things that that people can use is to work out what the pollen count is. And in my book, I actually refer to a particular website which can actually assess how much pollen there is. And it's local. It's based in Australia. But the great thing about that is that if you have that if you know that you've got a sensitivity to pollen, avoiding it is best. And you can work out how much pollen there is in the environment on a particular day by accessing good websites.
If parents are on the lookout for allergies, which allergies actually usually develop first in a baby?
Yeah, so there's a concept called the atopic march, which is a really interesting concept. And the atopic march refers to the fact that allergies come on at different times. So the big four allergies, which we're talking about here, would be eczema, we're talking about food allergies, we're talking about asthma and hay fever. So when it comes to the atopic march, we know that the very first one that starts is eczema. So it's the very first allergy to start in children, begins very in early infancy. It's followed closely by a food allergy. After that comes asthma and finally hay fever. And the reason why the atopic march is important is that if your child that's why it's important. And the Topic March has also given insights to many researchers, because if we know that a child is at high risk of developing a subsequent allergy, like a food allergy because they've already got eczema, then those kids can be recruited in very large clinical trials.
What do you see as the future for this area? I mean, are we talking something similar to COVID, that we're looking for a vaccine?
Look, one of the strategies that's been looked at when it comes to allergy prevention is to look at the idea of what we call immunotherapy. So immunotherapy is really the idea that we can try to vaccinate against an allergic response by introducing small amounts of an allergen into the body to develop tolerance. So it's a really good idea. It's actually been studied, and it's been helpful for a number of different conditions. So we know that for asthma, for example, there are immunotherapies out there that have been shown to be effective. We know that it's also got a clear role in insecting allergies. So both of these will involve injections directly into the skin. Researchers have looked at this sort of immunotherapy for food allergies, and what they found was that when they injected say peanut extract under the skin, it led to some adverse reactions. So they're not doing it by injections anymore, but oral immunotherapy is still being trialed. And in fact, there are some studies underway that have looked at oral immunotherapy.
Look, this is such a fascinating topic. I'm sure a lot of parents have gained a lot from hearing Dr. Ho today, and I thoroughly recommend Dr. Ho's book, The Healthy Baby Gut Guide, if you want to find out a whole lot more about these fascinating topics. But that's all we've got time for today, so I might just say we'd love to hear from any of our listeners. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, send us an email, and we'll be in touch. If you would like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. So it just remains for me now to give a very special thank you to our guest, Dr. Vincent Ho. Vincent, thank you very much for being a guest on Dads on the Air.
Thank you for having me, Bill.
We'll be back next week with another show on Dads on the Air.